Concerning the Nature of the Will, taken from The Freedom of the Will by Jonathan Edwards, it may possibly be thought that there is no great need of going about to define or describe the will, this word being generally as well understood as any other words we can use to explain it. And so perhaps it would be had not philosophers, metaphysicians, and polemic divines brought the matter into obscurity by the things they have said of it. But, since it is so, I think it may be of some use and will tend to greater clearness in the following discourse to say a few things concerning it. And therefore I observe that the will, without any metaphysical refining, is that by which the mind chooses anything. The faculty of the will is that power or principle of mind by which it is capable of choosing. An act of the will is the same as an act of choosing or choice. If anything, it is a more perfect definition of the will to say that it is that by which the soul either chooses or refuses. I'm content with it, though I think it enough to say it is that by which the soul chooses. For in every act of will whatsoever, the mind chooses one thing rather than another. It chooses something rather than the contrary, or rather than the want or non-existence of that thing. So in every act of refusal, the mind chooses the absence of the thing refused. The positive and the negative are set before the mind for its choice, and it chooses the negative, and the mind's making its choice in that case is properly the act of the will. The will's determining between the two is a voluntary determination, but that is the same thing as making a choice. So that by whatever names we call the act of the will, choosing, refusing, approving, disapproving, liking, disliking, embracing, rejecting, determining, directing, commanding, forbidding, inclining or being averse, being displeased or pleased with, all may be reduced to this, of choosing. Concerning the determination of the will, by determining the will, if the phrase be used with any meaning, must be intended, causing that the act of the will or choice should be thus and not otherwise, and the will is said to be determined when, in consequence of some action or influence, this choice is directed to and fixed upon a particular object. As when we speak of the determination of motion, we mean causing the motion of the body to be in such a direction rather than another. The determination of the will supposes an effect which must have a cause. If the will be determined, there is a determiner. This must be supposed to be intended even by them that say the will determines itself. If it be so, the will is both determiner and determined. It is a cause that acts and produces effects upon itself, and is the object of its own influence and action. With respect to that grand inquiry, what determines the will? It would be very tedious and unnecessary at present to examine all the various opinions which have been advanced concerning this matter. Nor is it needful that I should enter into a particular discussion of all points debated in disputes on that other question, whether the will always follows the last dictate of the understanding. It is sufficient to my present purpose to say, it is that motive which, as it stands in view of the mind, is the strongest that determines a will, but may be necessary that I should a little explain my meaning. By motive, I mean the whole of that which moves, excites, or invites a mind to volition, whether that by one thing singly or many things conjunctly. Many particular things may concur and unite their strength to induce a mind, and when it is so, all together are as one complex motive. And when I speak of the strongest motive, I have respect to the strength of the whole that operates to induce a particular act of volition, whether that be the strength of the one thing alone, or of many together. Whatever is objectively a motive in this sense must be something that is extant to the view or apprehension of the understanding or perceiving faculty. Nothing can induce or invite the mind to will or act anything any further than it is perceived, or is some way or other in the mind's view. For what is wholly unperceived and perfectly out of the mind's view cannot affect the mind at all. It is most evident that nothing is in the mind, or reaches it, or takes any hold of it, any otherwise than as it is perceived or thought of, and I think it must also be allowed by all that everything that is properly called a motive, excitement, or inducement to a perceiving, willing, agent, has some sort and degree of tendency or advantage to move or excite the will, previous to the effect, or to the act of the will excited. This previous tendency of the motive is what I call the strength of the motive. That motive which has a less degree of previous advantage or tendency to move the will, or which appears less inviting as it stands in the view of the mind, is what I call a weaker motive. On the contrary, that which appears most inviting, and has, by what appears concerning it, to the understanding or apprehension, the greatest degree of previous tendency to excite and induce a choice, is what I call the strongest motive. And in this sense, I suppose the will is always determined by the strongest motive.